Mr. Coffey.
May it please the court, I'm attorney Dennis Coffey. I practice in Milwaukee, and I appear on behalf of the appellant in this matter, Alan Burnett. Mr. Burnett, at the time relevant to this appeal, was a man in his 50s who had been the subject of multiple accidents, had multiple physical problems, and was suffering from a debilitating disease. He owned a farm in Saukville, Wisconsin. In July of the year in question, Mr. Burnett's farm was visited by various members of a drug enforcement task force. They went to the farm with the notion of conducting what they describe as a knock and talk. That is, they did not have a warrant. The evidence at the hearing with respect to suppression would have indicated that what they had received was a tip from a person working with them in hopes of assisting his own problems with drug offenses in Ozaukee County. At the point the officers entered Mr. Burnett's property, they exit their vehicles, walk to the house, and immediately see plants, some of them as much as 8 feet tall, that are along an L shape right next to the house. The motion to suppress in this matter did not challenge those plain view observations by the officers. Rather, the motion to suppress was directed specifically at the search of Mr. Burnett's, the interior of his residence, and a not attached garage area. Our position,
given all the plants that were out in plain view, what difference does this other stuff make?
Well, the government has argued that in its brief, Your Honor, and I understand the question in terms of harmless error. The reason I believe it is significant and it is not harmless is that the packaged marijuana and the scale in the garage, as well as the plants found in the house, have significance in terms of the jury's determination about whether they were possessed with intent to deliver. They may not have anything to do with the issue or the elements of manufacture, but they would have something to do with possession with intent to deliver, and obviously scales, bagging, those kinds of things are the indicia that law enforcement looks for in choosing to prosecute someone for possession with intent to deliver.
But as I understand it, there were several plants in plain view. And so you can just look at the quantity, the number of plants that were there, and leap to the conclusion this wasn't personal use, at least. Certainly that's the kind of evidence that can be considered.
In terms of the plants that were visible, however, it is, and I understand there's the juxtaposition of the different charges, but the manufacturing offenses have to be viewed differently from that of possession with intent to deliver. Obviously, Mr. Burnett has a farm where there are in excess of 100 plants that are, in essence, decorating the side of his house, if you will. So it's not a matter of him hiding them from law enforcement. Our position with respect to the motion to suppress is that there was not a voluntary consent. The officer testified that he asked Mr. Burnett, after he was in custody, for permission to search the residence. Mr. Burnett said, "Can I go with you?" To which the response was no. I would submit that that is not indicative of true consent. And I believe, as set forth in the brief, that what follows in terms of the officers trying to explain why they went into the basement of the residence and why they went into the garage suggests that you do not have voluntary consent with respect to going in all of those places. They try to expand residence to include everything on the property, but in another instance say, well, we had to go to Mr. Burnett to get his permission to go into the basement of the home. With respect to the question of forfeiture, which by virtue of time issues I would like to address, I understand there are a whole lot of marijuana plants, and I am not appreciating the significance of the numbers. I think we've argued, at least in another part of the brief,
the maximum fine was $2 million, I gather?
It was, $10,000 to $2 million.
So what does the forfeiture matter? The defendant, district court, could have imposed a $1 million fine. Of course, the only way the defendant could have paid the fine is to sell the property.
Well, I think that that's part of, I think that's part of what I find troublesome about what happened here. This court in Varner said you have to look at the total penalty imposed upon somebody when you deal with these issues. My client...
My question is, nothing here seems, so far as I can see, to turn on forfeiture. Right? Your argument would be equally strong if the district court had imposed a fine of $115,000, which your client had to pay by selling this property. That was its assessed valuation. Would you be making a serious argument that a $115,000 fine for this crime violated the Eighth Amendment?
Yes.
And you could actually keep your face straight.
Absolutely.
Some of us have better poker playing skills than others.
As I said, I thought I was doing a pretty good job this morning, Your Honor.
You are.
Thank you. But I think that one of the things that the court has to consider is the context in which this happens. The government returns an indictment in which the forfeiture provisions say we want the property and we want X number of dollars because of proceeds of this marijuana business. Before trial, the government tells the district court, we're not going to proceed on a proceeds theory. We're not going to seek any proceed forfeiture. And the evidence at trial substantiates no commercial venture on the part of the defendant. There is no evidence in this file, in this record, that says he sold any marijuana, delivered any marijuana. They don't have any evidence that he actually harvested any marijuana other than from my client's own remarks that he on occasion would pull leaves off of the plants that were alongside the house to brew a tea. Now, I understand that this court is not bound suddenly to accept Mr. Burnett's explanation of what he was doing. On the other hand, and the court has already referred to, well, there's a $2 million fine possible, and the government has argued that, well, as long as it's less than $2 million, courts have found that to be a not violative forfeiture. The problem that I have is that if the only number that matters is the $2 million, then the question becomes, what does proportionality mean? The definition of proportionality...
Well, so far the Supreme Court has never held that any punishment less than death is disproportional to any crime more serious than jaywalking. Isn't that a correct statement of governing law?
I don't know that I would go as low as jaywalking.
Last year it held that life was fine for, the crime of multiple shoplifting, provided you'd committed some violent offense in the past.
But even now there is the condition.
Well, what I'm saying is the trade-off between years in prison and financial penalties.
What I'm suggesting is that if one looks at all of the facts in this case...
What would you say is the trade-off between years in prison and financial penalties? Your client was sentenced to 5 years in prison. Is that more or less serious than a $115,000 fine? Right? You're not saying that 5 years in prison is cruel and unusual. Most people would think that an extra year in prison would be a lot worse than $115,000 fine.
In terms of the years in prison, I mean, if one looks at the guidelines, we're at 51 to 63 months, he gets 60 months because of the minimum mandatory sentence. Not about the debate, what I believe about minimum mandatory sentences with the court. But what I am trying to suggest is that if the only definition...
But I can't understand a world in which it would be consistent with the Eighth Amendment to sentence somebody who grows this amount of marijuana to 20 years in prison without possibility of parole, and it is, but not compatible with the Eighth Amendment to fine him $115,000. That would, you know, as Mr. Bumble would say, make the law out to be an ass.
Judge, my point is that if there is any meaning to the Supreme Court decision that says there has to be a proportionality analysis, then I have to decide what is the number against which we make that analysis. If the $2 million is the only mark, then I accept what the court is saying.
40 years in prison.
But under the guideline sentencing, they can't do that. And that's a legislative choice, just as the forfeiture provisions are legislative choices. There are cases, and we've cited them, that suggest you can look to the interest the person has in the farm. What was the nature of the activity associated with it? And in this case, as I said, there is no commercial activity that's evidence. His family...
You've already agreed this has nothing to do with the farm. Your argument would be the same if it were just $115,000 straight cash fine.
But in terms of a fine, I could argue to a district court that that's not an appropriate number based upon my client's financial circumstances.
Your argument here is a constitutional argument, not what is an appropriate number.
I understand that, but the court is saying to me the number can be 115 as a fine, but at least I get to respond to that at a sentencing hearing. I'll reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Henstead.
May it please the court. The defendant first challenges the district court's denial of his motion to suppress evidence. The district court, in making that determination, committed no errors of law. There was no basis for finding any factual determinations made by the district court were clearly erroneous. The testimony of both officers established that the exchange between the defendant and the officers on July 24th of 2002 was relatively calm and that it was non-coercive. The officers also each testified that the defendant consented to search to the searches of both his garage and his house. The district court found the officers credible and credited their testimony. The defendant testified that he didn't consent to any search at all, but the district court justifiably deemed the defendant's testimony unworthy of belief. This court should uphold the district court's denial of the defendant's motion.
It's not a question whether it's justifiable. It's just a question whether it's permissible.
Yes, Your Honor. And
district judges make a lot of findings that we wouldn't necessarily have made ourselves.
I guess my point, Your Honor, is that there's no basis for challenging the credibility determinations made by the district court on the record that's before this court. The defendant next challenges the sufficiency of the evidence introduced at trial with respect to each of the counts of conviction. But viewing the evidence in a light most favorable to the government, a rational trier of fact clearly could have found beyond a reasonable doubt each of the essential elements of these offenses. This court should therefore affirm the convictions on each of these counts. Finally, the defendant challenges the district court's forfeiture order as an unconstitutionally excessive fine in violation of the Eighth Amendment. In addressing this issue, the court must determine whether the forfeiture is grossly disproportional to the gravity of the defendant's offense. Now, this inquiry requires the court to compare the amount of the forfeiture to the gravity of the offense. Here, as the court has already noted, we've got forfeiture of a property that's valued at $115,500. And whatever the defendant may think about the gravity of his offense, the legislative judgment is clearly that it is a grave offense. They've imposed significant penalties for the offense, including a maximum of 40 years in prison and a $2 million fine. The Sentencing Commission has concluded likewise, also adopting a $2 million fine. Because the value of the property forfeited here is well within both the statutory and the guidelines fine range, this court should find that the forfeiture of the defendant's real property is not grossly disproportional to the gravity of his offense and should uphold the district court's forfeiture order. And if the court has no questions, I have nothing further.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anything further, Mr. Coffey?
Very briefly.
In Breyer, the court, talking about the civil forfeiture statute and saying the language for the criminal is the same, said that Congress's intent was to reach all real property used to promote the drug trade. And my problem with what has happened in this case is there is no evidence of promotion of a drug trade. If someone were to go to that property today, by virtue of nature, I would submit they will find marijuana plants growing on that farm.
Is that what they spotted from the air?
The air search is actually the premise for making the second search.
Would they find it growing in neat rows?
Pardon?
Would they find it growing in neat rows?
At this point, they may well, because nobody has done anything, and as the chemical...
Nature generally doesn't choose rulers.
I understand that. And that's the first search, and I'm aware of that. But in terms of what they see from the airplane, which is this tops of plants in the woods with no indication of being tended.
Yes, thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Case is taken under advisement. Our final case this morning is